Mention the name George Armstrong Custer, and most people immediately conjure up images of doom. In June 1876, the former Union Army general and Michigan native was killed, along with his entire command, by Native tribes at the Battle of the Little Bighorn in Montana. The tale of Custer's last stand is so symbolic as a metaphor for defeat that it was even parodied in this 1960 song by Larry Verne.
Please, Mr. Custer, I don't want to go. Listen, Mr.
But of course, his demise is not the entire story. George Armstrong Custer was a living legend who captured the public imagination even before his death. Current State's Kevin Lavery joins me with more. Kevin, what's your interest in General Custer?
Well, Mark, of course, it's Custer Week down in Monroe.
Well, near of course.
Yes. What else would it be? Down in Monroe, near the Ohio state line, George Armstrong Custer is remembered as a local boy who rose to fame. The town celebrates his life this time of year, and this time they're welcoming an award-winning historian to talk about their favorite son. T.J. Stiles won a Pulitzer Prize for his biography, Custer's Trials, A Life on the Frontier of a New America. And I had the pleasure of speaking with Mr. Stiles before he arrives in Monroe for a presentation this Thursday. And we started off where every Custer narrative begins, at the end.
Of course, he's most famous for his death at the Little Bighorn, which was an astonishing disaster for the Frontier Army. It was all the more remarkable, though, because Custer was renowned as a very capable cavalry commander. Custer himself was a polarizing figure. And so, yes, you know, that remarkable disaster has made him synonymous with doom. And yet, both his capabilities and his flaws, the way people loved him and the way they hated him, made him famous going into the battle. So my attempt to understand him was a way of, was to understand what he meant to Americans, how he became controversial, how it was that he helped to transform his own death into something much bigger than the same disaster might have been if, you know, resulted from someone else's leadership.
Custer was not from Michigan originally. He was born in Ohio, but he lived in Monroe between Detroit and Toledo. Did he happen to come from a military family? What is it that motivated him to join the Army?
Well, his origins are very interesting because he adopted Monroe as his hometown. It was very much a conscious choice on his part. His half-sister had moved there. He had other family in Monroe. But he was born in, you know, the more southern part of Ohio. And so he was really a product of border state culture. The part of Ohio where he was from was populated to a large extent by people who'd crossed the Ohio River from Kentucky and Virginia and slave-owning parts of the South. His father was from Maryland. And so he really loved Michigan. He identified consciously with the state, and yet he also had these aspects of his origins that carried over into his personality and the way he was seen by the world. So he went to West Point, I think, to escape those early obscure origins of his. As he once said to his wife, Libby Bacon Custer, he said, you know, all my life I've wanted more than anything else to be great. And I think he wanted to be seen as great. And so I think that was one of the reasons why he went to West Point.
So you mentioned the border state culture that he came from. Is this a man who could have ended up fighting for the Confederacy?
Actually, no. And that's something that's interesting, too, is that when he became a general at the age of 23, a general of U.S. volunteers, the temporary regiments and organizations that fought the Civil War for the Union, he affected this very flamboyant style, a style that we see in the Civil War most commonly among Southern generals. It was very much a sort of chivalric, Southern-looking charisma that he was trying to evoke and that he authentically had. And yet, you know, when we think about his actual loyalties, it was never in doubt that he was loyal to the Union.
We're talking with T.J. Stiles. He is the author of the Pulitzer Prize-winning biography, Custer's Trials, A Life on the Frontier of a New America. He is speaking in Monroe, Michigan, this coming Thursday evening as part of the town's Custer Week events. When we talk about George Armstrong Custer's early days, the chivalrous persona that he adopted, this is a guy who graduated last in his class at West Point, so I'm wondering if maybe that bold style and that bold look was overcompensation for a not-so-stellar career at the academy.
Well, I don't think he was trying to compensate for his Academy standing later, but rather his performance at West Point tells us something about his personality and how he wanted to present himself to the world. At West Point, he was trying to win admiration, but the admiration of his fellow cadets. He was, in fact, a highly intelligent man who actually had a love of learning. It's sort of surprising as you follow his life to see how he was excited and interested in science, and he read quite widely, and he wrote also in later life. He was a popular writer and almost a kind of public intellectual, at least he wanted to be. But at West Point, he realized that the gratification he got from being at West Point was to be the sort of daring, devil-may-care, rule-flouting fellow who won the admiration of his fellow cadets for taking risks and not paying so much attention to his academic career. But during the Civil War, he actually showed that he had learned a lot at West Point. And rather than simply blindly leading charges, he actually had a great tactical sense which made him consistently successful.
So after his career in the Civil War, he was dispatched to the West. Was that considered important or prestigious duty back then? Was that a bad assignment? How did he feel about going out to the hinterlands?
Well, you know, there were two stages to his deployment. First, he was deployed to Texas for several months, and he helped to occupy Texas, which had not been conquered by Union troops during the Civil War. And in that case, he was commanding volunteers who'd signed up to fight the Civil War and wanted to go home. And he didn't know how to manage men. This was not the Michigan Brigade. This was not the 3rd Cavalry Division, which he led later in the Civil War. These were other troops who did not have that bond with him that he'd formed during the Civil War. And he lashed out at their complaints with outrageous discipline. He became brittle. He was unsure of himself, and he overcompensated. So we really see Custer, in his first deployment in the West, becomes very brittle. Later in 1866, he's deployed to kind of the classic Custer career as we know it on the Great Plains, where he fought the High Plains peoples, the Cheyennes, and later the Lakotas. And there we see him, again, dealing with the fact that he's not in combat very often, that he is now a cog, a sort of middle manager in a large organization, which is trying to simply keep the peace for the most part, during most of their time in the West. And it really wears on him. And he begins to have problems with his men. He begins to create problems with the chain of command. And it begins a pattern in which Custer began to create crises, self-created crises, which he only got out of by being able to fight and win a battle. So he was actually court-martialed and convicted in 1867, and I think quite justly so. He returned to duty a year later and fought the Battle of the Washita and did everything his commanders wanted in that campaign, and that rescued him from the mess he'd created. And this happened again later in 1873 when he went to the Northern Plains, got into a crisis through his problems he created for himself in the Army, but then he fought two battles against the Lakotas and did quite well, and again rescued himself from the messes he had made.
Sort of a professional midlife crisis, it sounds like. So let's get to Montana now. What is leading up to June 25th, 1876, the Battle of Little Bighorn?
You know, my book is not focused on the Little Bighorn, but I think it sheds light on the great crisis in Custer's life, in the sense that he was going into this battle hoping not to achieve great things in terms of new fame and new heights in his career, but rather to rescue himself from another disaster he'd created by his intervention in the main currents in American history and politics at the time.
This sounds like a Greek tragedy.
Yeah, it is. It's very much, you know, a case of someone's failings being the underside of their strengths. He was a charismatic figure. He had this desire to be great, and also combined with professional training that allowed him to do very well in battle. But those battles were so far and few between. And his desire to be great did not serve him so well off the battlefield. You know, I thought I would have to try to explain in my book, when I was writing it, I thought I needed to explain the dramatic portrayal that Custer made of himself, the way he made this big flamboyant show, because modern culture tends to kind of look down on that flamboyance. And yet now we have a presidential campaign in which one of the candidates is a highly performative, flamboyant character. And all of a sudden I find people asking me to compare Custer to Donald Trump. Well, it's not a comparison I really want to make because it's, you know, they're very different times. And yet we can see, you know, that there are people in many points in history who win attention and even admiration by, you know, really striving to show themselves as being larger than life, that they want to be larger than life. They're aspiring to show themselves as a dramatic character. And, you know, it spoke to Americans then as it speaks to some Americans now. Others, quite the opposite, both then and now. And it's a really fascinating study, not just in history, but in human nature.
We've been talking with T.J. Stiles. He is the author of Custer's Trials, A Life on the Frontier of a New America, a Pulitzer Prize-winning biography of General George Armstrong Custer, who lived much of his life in Monroe, Michigan. And Mr. Stiles will be in Monroe Thursday evening as part of that city's annual Custer Week celebration. Thank you so much for shedding light on George Armstrong Custer, a man who was misunderstood by many people, but a fascinating life nonetheless. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
For Current State, I'm Kevin Lavery.